Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to Season 3 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of ComicBook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I just brought the OG team. I have Matthew Aguilar and Janelle Wheeler.
Hello, everybody.
And today, we are kind of in a happy mood today because we get to celebrate. There's something to celebrate. Movies are back,
So much content.
Yeah, movies are back, baby. We are happy today because, like I said, the big screen is coming back. Today marks the release of F9, the next movie in the Fast and Furious saga. It looks like it's going to get people out to theaters. But more importantly, with it, we've gotten kind of the whole cycle of big screen movies kind of coming back. Just we got blessed this morning with a new trailer for Marvel Shang-Chi, which we're going to break down in its entirety. Yeah, I mean, things are just happening and it feels good. It feels good like we're back. So, man.
Welcome back.
Yeah, guys, it's been a strange year and a half, but yeah, it feels like we're getting back. So that's all to say, we're going to be talking about F9 today. I've seen the film. We're going to talk about Shang-Chi. We're going to talk about Loki Episode 3, the new Transformers movie that was just announced.
Yeah.
And we have some interesting comics to break down as well. So it's going to be a fun show. Let's get to it. All right. Right off the bat, let's talk about Shang-Chi. So I wasn't expecting this morning, but we woke up and here we are. We have a new Shang-Chi trailer. What did you guys think? And then we're going to get into some of the big things that will. Well, I mean, let's just get to the big things first. So if you haven't watched the trailer, go on comicbook.com Marvel right now and check it out. The new Shang-Chi trailer is out. So be sure you guys check that out. So this trailer was the final trailer, and it basically gives us a lot more of the finer points of what this story is all about. The first trailer was all about just introducing Shang-Chi and his kind of personal story of going out in the world, almost in the Amish kind of way of he is raised by this very strict father and this very strict order. Then he went out to the world to kind of find himself and now his father wants to draw him back in. So that was kind of the personal premise. Now we see some of the more of the Marvel-y stuff that's going to be going on in this movie with this trailer. We see what the 10 rings are. The internet's already having fun with that because they're more 10 bracelets than 10 rings. So there's a whole jewelry debate going on, but there's reasons for that we'll get into. And so, yeah, we got more of what a Marvel-style martial arts action epic movie looks like and what distinguishes it. We also got some key shots that people are freaking out about. The biggest things, of course, are another preview of this tournament scene that we're going to get inside the movie, where it looks like the Incredible Hulk's Abomination is taking on B.D. Wong from Doctor Strange. And that has people flipping out, of course, and a shot of Shang-Chi seemingly meeting a dragon who people want to freak out about as being Fin Fang Foom from the comics, but it's not quite that. We'll get into that as well. Look more like Falcor to me, which made me happy. I was like, are we getting some never-ending story in this?
That's great.
But yeah. Matt, wow. Janelle, what did you guys think of the Shang-Chi final trailer and kind of the larger look at this movie? Janelle, let's go with you.
I just love hearing you. I love all these variations of the name. You just said Shang-Chi. It's just so fun.
Well, I have a small speech impediment. I think that's all that was. Let's not get me in trouble. Yeah,
no,
let's not
get that. Same. I'm worried that I'm saying it wrong. So please forgive us if we're not saying it right. I really loved it. I thought it was action packed. The cinematography looked stunning. The world building, just seeing all these different places and seeing the rings in action was everything I needed to get excited about this content that I'm not as familiar with. And then seeing a possible link to Strange, of course, had me screaming. And I was just loving it. I was living for this trailer. I love it so much. And I am so pumped about it. And now I'm like, oh my God, why am I not reading these comics? Because I need to get prepared.
Oh man. Hey, we are though sometimes. I think we hit.
True. Yeah, we did Shang-Chi number one.
It was great, actually. Yeah.
So yeah, we do need to get those more into circulation. This was a much, and if I remember correctly, the last time when we talked about the teaser trailer, I was actually pretty positive on it. I thought most of us were. I don't think Kofi was as much as everybody else. So this one, I thought that was
To be fair, I said I liked it well enough, but I hadn't seen what really made it sell it as like a Marvel level martial arts action. And
that wasn't a negative, by the way.
That's a fair point.
It was a wait and see. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a wait and see.
So, and I wouldn't say blew me out of the water either, but I thought this trailer was much better. I thought this was a much better trailer just overall, and also just presented a much clearer picture about what you're getting when you hop into this. You know, I still need, like, we haven't seen a ton of the actual, like, martial arts stuff. Like, we see some of it, like, we actually see some of the fights themselves, we get little snippets, but like, that's the stuff I really want to see. And we got snippets here, we got more than we did last time, but like, as the rings look cool. I dig the rings. I mean, I just think for the most part, having Mandarin sit out there with, you know, looking like a pimp with his 10 rings in the old school way was just going to look goofy and stupid. So having it here with actually like link backs to like, you know, actual like mythology and stuff, like real life mythology like that, I think that's really cool. I think it looks cool on screen, that final spot where they're like fighting over the rings and they're both kind of playing that tug of war. I think that looked really cool. So I'm excited for that. But like the actual moment to moment fights, like I still want to see how that really looks. And I think then it'll sell me. I was curious though. I watched it with Anissa, and Anissa wasn't that big on the initial teaser, right? And she's been just like absorbing Marvel stuff lately. So like she's fully in, but she watched it and was like, it makes me a little more curious, but like, I'm curious to see how the mainstream viewer sees this trailer as opposed to the people who are already jazzed about it because we're Marvel fans. I don't know if it did enough there. I don't know if it won that crowd
over.
But I think for the Marvel people, especially with like Abomination and stuff like that, I think it did its job. So that's
That's a good question. Although I will say I was talking to some friends out of town and who I didn't expect to be into Marvel, but like they are up on everything that's happening. They're like, oh man, I haven't seen Loki yet, but oh man, WandaVision and like everything. I mean, Marvel has become like so mainstream in so ways that I think we may underestimate how many people will just say, oh, it's a Marvel movie. It's got fighting. It's got martial arts. Okay. Like, I mean, but all great points, Matt. So, let's take some of these finer points. First of all, no, this dragon isn't Fin Fang Foom. I'm sorry to burst anybody's bubble, but after Simu Liu, I'm just butchering names.
You fixed it. You're good.
Anyway, he came out and said that that Fin Fang Foom is something they removed from the mythology, so it's not in the movie. That's not him. We even have merchandise. There's an article up on comicbook.com Marvel right now. And it breaks down pulls up some of the kind of social media reminding us that the merchandise has leaked about this. And this dragon is named called the Great Protector. So this is a part of whatever's going on with mythology. And it kind of ties back into the Ten Rings and the kind of jokes people are already making about the Ten Rings being bracelets in actuality. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember that in this mythology and Chinese mythology, you know, dragons play a big part in the source of mysticism and things like that. And the kind of presumption is that the rings are actually the rings of these dragons who were giant. So if you take a ring off of a dragon and put it on a human, it's going to be about the size of your arm.
I love that. I think that's super cool. I'm into it.
I mean, they're technically still rings. You know what I mean? It'd be one thing if they were like squares or triangles. Like they're rings. Like they're just big rings.
Yeah, they're big rings. They're big rings for dragons. And there's been a lot of speculation that, you know, this is to kind of help distinguish them visually from like the Infinity Stones and things like that, because you don't want anybody getting confused. Like a mainstream viewer would be like, wait, this dude's like curling his fingers and he's got magic lights. And what is this? Is this like Thanos part two? Like what's happening here? So this is a distinctly different kind of mystical MacGuffin. But I like that it still feels kind of in line with like Doctor Strange, the Infinity Stones, the Eternals powers, and all of that. And it's a potential link that we didn't really have it focused on. Now these rings bring in like, what are they? What are they made of? Where do they come from? And like, who are they linked back to in this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe cosmic order is a big thing we can also get into. But
I'm so over Infinity Stones.
Yeah. I mean,
get them out of my comics.
I want them all on my desk.
I want the Infinity paperweights. Yeah.
So over them.
Oh man, Matt. Yeah, well,
I know everyone just like, oh, MCU only, but like in the comics, between all of that stuff that was going on in the movies, there was like five events all centered around the Infinity Stone.
So, bro, why do I feel like you would change your tune instantly if they gave Darkhawk an Infinity Stone?
Here's the thing, he doesn't need one, he's got an amulet, man. Right.
There you go.
Anyway,
oh my God.
What did you guys think about Abomination and seeing Abomination show up in of all places? And it is confirmed. There are people have already gone back to the trailer and put on the subtitles, which is always the key to finding out these big Marvel mysteries, which is just going to turn on the subtitles and it says Abomination. Abomination roars. Like, so this is Abomination, according to the closed captioning.
Wouldn't it be great if they like were trying to like working title that stuff? So like they, instead of Abomination to keep the secret, they put like Chuck roars. That'd be amazing. Can I watch a whole trailer like that? You're welcome.
You just gave me flashback to this week's episode of Dave. Oh man. Anyway, moving right along, because hardly anybody's gonna get that reference. So some people are saying in the comments, and it's Abomination with a more comics accurate look. He's got his fins and all that, so that's pretty kind of crazy. What did you guys think about seeing Abomination, this character people have waited for since the Incredible Hulk to show back up, just appearing in this random scene in Shang-Chi?
Matt, you got to take this because I wasn't waiting for him to show back up. I was like, wait, who? Okay, cool. Yeah.
It was unexpected. I did not expect to see Abomination. I will say I wasn't like, you know me. I'm very much like, oh yeah, a cameo. You know me. I don't get like too worked up about it. And so it's like, oh, that's nice. And so that's how I reacted. I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I was more excited about Wong.
Yeah, I was losing my mind about Wong.
I don't know if it's been confirmed, but it's a sorcerer who looks like he's a master of the mystical arts and very much looks like Wong.
You see the spell, you see the, like, I saw that. And I was like, I got pumped for that because I'm pumped for the sequel. So that, that is what got me excited about that scene, as opposed to like, oh, Abomination. You know, they could have put Stilt Man in there and I would have had the same level of excitement. Actually, I probably would have been more excited.
I was actually excited because I hope it is Wong, because I hope it ties back to this kind of small but funny theme from Infinity War that Wong has no money.
Please let that be the case.
Yeah, that would be hilarious if Wong was like trying to get some money real quick.
I could fight in this.
So yeah.
That would be awesome.
Behaven in the chat says he looks like he grew some gills / fish parts. Maybe Namor sponsors him to fight now. And I've seen some people talking about that, though, that maybe it's a representative.
Stop it.
Well, that could be why Wong's there, too.
It could be because he's got to pay his bills.
Stop.
Or you have to represent someone from each.
Remember Ralph Boner. Everybody calm down.
Or
relax. All right. But anything else you guys want to say about Shang-Chi? Michelle Yeoh looks awesome. I always love Michelle Yeoh. This looks pretty cool, man. I'm kind of more excited for this film now. I am. So going to be looking forward to that in September. But before we get there, we got to talk about Loki.
Loki.
Yes.
What time is it? Let's see. Does Rich want us to just pay bills now and then we can just talk about everything else?
That might be good.
Yeah, let's just go. We're gonna run an ad, pay some bills, and then come back, and then we're gonna talk Loki episode 3, the new Transformers movie, F9, iCarly, and some comics.
God. Yeah, iCarly, you slipped it in there,
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Didn't get me that time. I was ready.
Didn't get me either.
I was ready, baby. Woo-hoo! All right. So we're back. Comic Book Nation. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, welcome. We already talked about the Shang-Chi trailer. We are now going to talk about Loki episode 3. So this episode of Loki took us to the planet Lamentis 1, where Loki and his nefarious variant Sylvie got stuck together in a kind of odd couple pairing for this kind of road trip movie across a planet that's doomed to be destroyed, and their time hopping device is broken. And we got this kind of character building episode for Loki, which is kind of split people. It's been the lowest rated one, but also generated a lot of kind of fan love on social media, mainly because of the interaction between Tom Hiddleston's Loki and this variant Sylvie, played by Sophia Di Martino. It was, for me, I had to watch it twice. I didn't like it the first time when I watched it in the middle of the night, just to kind of do the, and he did big things happen, spin outs, you know, for a comic book. But when I actually just sat down and got to watch it free of all that, I actually really like this episode. I think it might be probably since the first episode, which was my favorite because of the world building. It was just a great character episode of Loki having to talk with Sylvie and getting to know Sylvie and having her have a kind of breakout episode. What did you guys think? We're here to really talk theories. What theories do you guys have after seeing this episode? Let's share with the people. Janelle, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved it. I've seen it 3 times. I got all the action I needed at the end. I just have to make note, this run scene to try to get onto the arc was bananas. The choreography of it, it looked like it was all like one shot.
Yeah, it was another infamous. Well, it was simulated very well, but it was a one take sequence.
Yes. And I loved the perspective. I felt like I was on an Avengers ride. Like, it reminded me of the Spider-Man ride at Islands of Adventure. I was like, this needs to be an actual ride. It was so cool. And then I was also like, can I play this video game, please? Like, I just want an entire video game of being Loki trying to get onto this arc in this weird area. So that alone just... Oh my God, I loved it. Obviously, shout out. It's freaking Pride Month. And Loki basically just said, hey, I'm bi. And I was living for it. It was such an incredible moment. I actually almost got teary-eyed because to have that in such a mainstream, like a Disney production, like on Disney Plus, it was just really, really cool. And I loved seeing that. Obviously, the smaller parts, their dialogue, talking about their backgrounds, you know, their family dynamics. It was cool to see Loki talking about his mom again, also kind of sad. Loved the moment of Thor, like the reference to Thor with the slamming of the drink down. I mean, there's just so many like really cool nods to different, you know, times we've seen Loki in his, I don't know, in his world with everybody. But if we're talking about what we think is going to happen or what's going on, I really think Mobius, now that we know that they are, the TVA are all variants, does anybody else think that Mobius is Loki? Like another version of Loki?
Oof, that's a head scratcher. I hadn't come up with that theory.
Half Cent Josh says nope. No. I love it.
I think it's going to turn out that Mobius, the reason why he has this whole jet ski thing is he's just like some Florida beach bum or something like that, that like got like swooped up into this world. And that's why he's always thinking about jet skis and like all kinds of that. And I think that'll be the kind of the humorous thing if his character gets to go back to just being this beach bum. But because that's perfect for Owen Wilson.
Okay. Wow.
My theory is, and Matt, I'm going to throw this to you too, because of comic book history, is I don't think that they've chosen just Sylvie for no reason. Sylvie is an actual character from Marvel Comics. She's Sylvie Lushton, who is a young girl or just a created entity by Loki who takes on the powers and kind of persona of the Enchantress, Amora. And she's basically a tool and a Trojan horse for Loki to use, primarily to breach like magical defenses and kind of getting close and do all this other stuff. And that Trojan horse aspect of it makes me wonder if they've chosen Sylvie to do the same in this show. I feel like there's a big theme of Loki that is about false faces that you wear or kind of different faces you can wear and that kind of whole idea. And I don't think anybody is who they seem to be, right? Like, we find out the TVA agents, the big reveal in this, aren't actual creations of the Timekeepers. They're just regular people who've basically been like plucked and enchanted into doing this, you know, bureaucratic service for the timeline. Loki, the whole question of Loki and who isn't Loki is a big one, right? Are the Timekeepers who they say they are and are they real? And, you know, all of that stuff is at work in this show. So I don't know if Sylvie's going to be the end of her own story or just, again, kind of a Trojan horse for somebody or something else. That's my whole theory. I think the Timekeepers aren't there. I don't think Sylvie's a real independent operator. I think all of this is a chess game with other people playing.
Now you think Kang. Now you think Kang is the one behind everything.
Correct? My theory is that this is a chess game between either Kang and Immortus, or Kang and another Loki. And Richard E. Grant is still on in the wings. Actor Richard E. Grant from Star Wars is in the wings, and I think he's going to be playing an older Loki. And I think one of the big twists is going to be that this variant Loki has done this before. And is kind of, we're going to see him and an older version of him kind of playing that Immortus part, if not Immortus, just that kind of role that he maybe did get to the Timekeepers in, you know, became the last one up there and is actually the one running things. It's going to be another Loki who's running the TVA. So that's my whole theory. But I do think it's a chess game. It just depends on who Marvel chooses to make the kind of master puppeteers of this whole thing.
Right. Because yeah. I agree with you. I feel like I think having a Loki be the one who's actually pulling the strings of the TVA is where we're headed. I do think that because, again, it is playing with that stuff. And I am curious, though, how you feel like, because I get it, because Sylvie has that role in the comics and can kind of be a little fluid, like in how she's used and stuff. Sometimes she's just like all powerful. I mean, geez, recently she had a son, and that son is like her Namor's son. And then like he's ends up back in time. Like there's a whole thing with that character in Namor. And I see Namor pop up a couple times in the comics. But what is she like in your theory, like what is she a Trojan horse for? Like, how is she because her mission is right, like, at least so far anyway, it's like to get to the TVA and kind of break their whole system down. But like, who is she serving then? Because she really seems like she's in it for herself.
Herself. Yeah.
I think that she thinks she's in it for herself, but there are clues in, especially in this episode, and I just watched again this morning, that make me think, well, like when she's describing how to enchant people, I think there's a lot of irony wrapped up in the series where she may not know, but that somebody is talking through her and that she is an enchanted person herself. Just like the TVA, people are kind of all enchanted and don't have any idea of like what they're doing and how they're being mentally manipulated. And I think she could just be another person who is, you know, being talked through rather than being as independent as she may.
Gotcha. See. Okay. So if you're okay, so that's actually not, because my, I don't know exactly how we get from point A to point B. In my theory, like, it's missing a middle part.
We can fill it in. Let's go.
But like my end thing is like what I envision anyway. And they better, I saw someone, I can't remember where, but like they were like, it's going to all be a dream. They better not Newhart this. I'll be so pissed.
Oh my God.
But if we get to the, I feel like over the course of these like next few episodes, we're going to meet, or I want this to be the case anyway, we're going to meet other variant Lokis, like as they start snapping certain people out. Like certain things happen where we actually get like kid Loki. Maybe we get a couple other Lokis who all kind of have that same trait in common of always kind of being curious and always being a little bit like they've all been shells in the past for other people to kind of operate through. And that was kid Loki had kind of the same thing. And then you're going to get this team of Lokis that ends up converging onto the TVA and then discovering that, oh, hey, it's one of us, which could be that older Loki thing. And then it's just like Loki versus Loki chaos.
That's awesome.
And that would be cool.
That's an MCU thing to do.
That character can support it. There's tons of other different versions of that character to be able to operate from. And it all would make sense. But again, like I'm missing a big chunk of them. I don't know how we get there. And also, there's only six episodes, correct?
Yeah, only six.
Yeah. So we're already left.
There's a lot. There would be a lot to get to that. There would be a lot you need to do in the next couple episodes. And this episode ends where like we're not even off the planet yet. So I don't know how we get there, but that would be cool for me.
Well, I mean, I wish I had thought about this in advance and had Rich pull it, but Brandon Davis did do an interview with Tom Hiddleston, and Tom Hiddleston kind of teased that it's between episode 4 and 5 where things really hit the fan, and that's going to probably blow fans' minds. So by this time next week, we might be sitting here like WTF.
Yes.
What's happening? Man. And one of these theories is maybe trying to prove to be right. Either they're going to get rescued off that planet by a bunch of rogue, you know, somebody joked in the comments, the Bad Batch Loki, the Loki Bad Batch. But
I'd watch that.
Yeah. Haven. I love that. That's great.
I'd watch it. And here's the thing. This show it's just my favorite. I mean, I this show can't do any wrong. I love this episode just overall, even though it's kind of a detour. I've seen some like reactions that's kind of slower paced and the overall plot doesn't develop a ton, but I feel like the stuff they did reveal has major consequences. So like, you know, the whole variance, like them being people before, like that's a huge development, even though it's a relatively small moment. It's just a conversation, but I think it will pay off.
You always have those people, like this happened on Walking Dead all the time. Like we would get character development episodes and I was just eating it up, and I love understanding the characters more, but there are tons of people who do not like character development episodes. I know I'm in the minority a little bit there.
No. Yeah. That fireworks scene, just money, man. That's so good.
Yes.
All right, so that's me.
Yeah, I think people are asking in the comments, how do you think they're gonna, who's gonna show up to rescue them?
Mobius as Loki.
Either Mobius will show up with the TVA having finally tracked them down and save their bacon, or whoever the larger puppeteer big bad really is would be the only other person I would think would be able to save them for reasons, whatever. But those are Loki theories. I think next week we're going to have our mind blown and have a lot more to kind of just go nuts about. And I'm excited for that. So, yeah, like Matt, I'm also loving this show. It's great. The soundtrack for the show just from like the music they choose for like the opening. Cause I started that first scene of this one with a homegirl from American, what's her name? American Honey or whatever film she was from.
Oh yes. That clubbing scene was so good.
Yeah.
That music was amazing. What a cool start.
Yeah. And that Loki theme song slaps so hard. It's like
so creepy and eerie.
Kubrick level. Yeah. It's Stanley Kubrick level just slaps right there. So I'm loving Loki too. So Tom Hiddleston was smart to get his name on here as a producer. All right. Moving right along. That's Loki. Can't wait for next week's talk. Seriously. Matt, let's talk Transformers.
Yeah. So, more than meets the eye.
Yeah. We got a couple things happening with Transformers universe. Paramount has several movies in development, but they just gave us reason to get really excited about one of them, which is Transformers. You did this article, Matt. You want to talk about it?
Sure. Rise of the Beasts. Rise of the Beasts. For those who don't know, I'm a huge Beast Wars mark, and the team at Paramount invited us to see a presentation and hear from the team behind it, and also see a bunch of concept art, a bunch of early mocks of some of the Transformers and the villains and everything. It's set, well, one, just to get the basics out of the way, it's set in 1994. This is a follow-up to Bumblebee. So this is in the same universe. It picks up. They actually showed us Bumblebee's kind of updated look. He's kind of got this off-road vibe. With like a cargo thing on top, and they're kind of leaning into that. But the biggest thing is that it's very much, this is, while that was a focus on Bumblebee, Bumblebee's going to play a part in this, but the main hero of this is Optimus Prime. And it is very much like they are leaning into the G1 versions of these characters, but specifically Optimus. So, you know, it's very much like, should a lot of longtime fans have craved that, even at the beginning of Bumblebee, when we see that big scene on Cybertron, fans were like eating that up before like the Bumblebee stuff started. So here it really seems like we're going to get kind of this story about Optimus Prime and like his connection to Earth, because like when this movie begins, he doesn't have that yet. Like he just got here essentially. So you're going to kind of start to see like that relationship form, why so many years later he really has this bond with humanity and bond with Earth. You're going to see that kind of develop. And then they showed us some concept art. We got to see Optimus Primal. Yes, Peter Cullen, by the way, Hefson Josh, is voicing Optimus. And they've said essentially like he's got the job until he doesn't want to do it. It's very much like, you know, it's yours. And I'm so glad, because there's that voice is just so iconic. But Optimus Primal looks awesome. They're trying to really kind of embrace the like the biological side of when their designs. So they're really embracing, like they're trying to make the armor when they're in beast mode look seamless. So like Rhinox, they showed Rhinox looks phenomenal. We only saw him in beast mode. We didn't see bot mode, but like the textures and like the armor plating that's on him really pushes, like makes him look like a rhinoceros. And then you still see the little accents of being like an Autobot, or sorry, a beast, but like you still see that, but it's really doing a good job. Primal looks like just an absolute brute force tank. Like he's got, like you can see like the underplating, and there's patches of fur and stuff. The designs look really, really good. These are early, so they're not final or anything. So they even said like we're very nervous to show these, because like these could change. The biggest thing, of course, Predacons are going to be in here. That's the beast kind of sworn enemy. But they're really leaning into the Terracons. That's who they really put a lot of time and effort into. That's kind of how they want to leave their stamp. They also tease essentially that there are, this is just like, they showed about seven and maybe about seven characters overall. But like they said that is just the tip of the iceberg. There are a ton of other characters coming. So like, you know, Cheetor, I can't wait to see some of these other designs. It really feels like it's being done by fans of that particular era of the franchise. So if you are a fan and you liked Bumblebee's kind of more its approach to storytelling, They're really leaning into that. So, I mean, I left with very positive vibes. I'm hoping the final product delivers, but I left with good vibes.
Go in. All right. Thank you. That's a good recap of the Transformers Rise of the Beast presentation. Yeah, man, I'm a big Beast Wars fan, so I'm really looking up to this. We know just a little bit more background. This one's going to star in the Heights star. Anthony Ramos will be starring in this one as the male lead. Dominique Fishback from Judas and the Black Messiah. And what was that HBO show? Oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking. The Deuce. She'll be the female lead, I think, is she was kind of tapped to be the female lead in this. And this is different from the other film, which is in development from Angel Soto, I believe, is the other director who they tapped to kind of do another one of unknown.
That subject. One seems to be, from everything I'm seeing, it's standalone.
Yeah.
Because, like, they make a thing. I mean, they're not... That other one doesn't seem to be continuing the Bay franchise because they even said
that's done. Yeah,
they're setting this one. The whole challenge was really to set this one back far enough so that as things play out, it doesn't run into the Bay films. So it doesn't seem like they're trying to get to that connecting point anytime soon.
No, they're trying to slowly do that Homer Simpson into the bushes about that whole thing. So, all right, that's what's coming up. So something from Transformers coming up that we can actually be excited about. That's kind of a new one. Real quick, I'll say also, if you haven't seen it, the official trailer for Halloween Kills dropped last night.
Crazy.
It's on comicbook.com horror. And yeah, this one looks like it's going to be a good time. I mean, it's very much in the vein of Halloween 2 in the sense that it just picks up literally right after the first reboot film we just got and shows Michael Myers ain't done yet, baby.
Those dumb firefighters.
Oh, I felt so bad, but that, I mean, it looks really good. Like the way it was filmed, like that fire scene is pretty awesome looking. Yeah. Cause if you remember the end of the first film, he was trapped in a burning cage that Jamie Lee Curtis set for him. But the firefighters want to rescue people cause they're noble firefighters and they rescue the wrong guy this time. But, Michael Myers gets back up to slashing and it looks like this one's going to be a good time. And, you know, we've heard words like masterpiece thrown around for this sequel. And so far, like, I mean, just the filming and like just the way it looks. I mean, this looks even much better than the reboot, which I really liked from David Gordon Green and Danny McBride. So I'm happy Halloween is looking strong. And that's also coming out this year. So these are kind of our 2020 holdover films. So this is it's good. I'm really getting hyped. Movies are back, baby. Like I said. All right. So check that out. Comicbook.com horror. If you want to see the Halloween Kills new trailer. Speaking of movies, this week we're going to do some quick mentions for everybody kind of has their own rants and raves that they want to mention. Mine this week is going to be F9. I went out and saw the new Fast and Furious film. And what I can say about it, I'm not going to do any spoilers. I'm going to try to keep this spoiler free, is that it's very much a Fast and Furious film. Director Justin Lin is back. And you would think that maybe this is like a happy homecoming. Justin Lin is back, you know, Fast and Furious is back. We're back in movies. But for me, I'll be honest, I was a little underwhelmed by F9. And I think what it is for me, and I've been a long time person who loves the Fast and Furious movies as a guilty pleasure. So I'm not a hater here, is the franchise just feels a little rudderless right now. Like, I just kept asking myself during the film. I was like, I don't even know how to orient myself in this franchise anymore because I'm just like, what are we like? And who is everybody in this now? Like, you know, it's just weird. Like you got Vin Diesel walking around in like pastels and, you know, linen pants and stuff because he's a dad now and he's just still, and it seems like Dom Toretto's only character development is to walk around and hold his arms down like this and do that. And, you know, Letty's like says, I mean, one of the big themes is for this one is him and Letty and being like, this is not who we are. Like retired parents, like we're still kick ass. And I'm like, bro, I don't even know who you guys are anymore. Like now you're like super spies getting called like James Bond. Like, I don't even know what's going on. Like,
it's so great.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that John Cena was also really miscast in this one. I love John Cena, but like him as Dom's brother. First of all, I think they even make a joke about the bloodlines and like
the makeup
of the Toretto's. There's a joke about that in the movie. But like, yeah, it just seems like John Cena trying to be a super spy and like run around and do all this stuff looks so funny because John Cena is so stiff and like upper body, you know, swole, like him like going down a zip line looks funny. And him just getting in the car and driving, it looks like somebody shoved the Hulk into a car and is like, try to drive this. And he's just kind of like, looks really awkward doing it. So I think he was miscast and that was kind of a big thing that holds back the film. So, yeah. And it's just, I mean, it is rudderless without kind of Paul Walker's Brian and without, I mean, The Rock missing is a big kind of noticeable absence in this. The core team isn't even that interesting anymore. It's just kind of a boring version of Dom. Letty's still cool. Seeing Nat, I love Natalie Emmanuel, but yeah, her character is, you know, she's okay. Like, but I don't want to see her, Ludacris, and Tyrese are not like a crack team of people I want to see necessarily being in this kind of badass Fast and Furious vein. So seeing some old faces come back was cool. Han being back was kind of cool, but it just feels like such a soap opera now. Like it really does. This movie is now going through hoops, and we just did there is a credit scene that you should stay for, but by now, like just trying to explain some of this stuff, like Fast and Furious is starting to feel like the comic books we try to explain every week, with the retcons and being like, well, in Tokyo Drift, this happened, but it didn't really happen because then you find out in Fast and Furious 6 and 7 that this happened, but now that didn't happen because now you find out that this happened and Han's still like, and it's just like, oh my God. Yeah. It's all over the place. So, I mean, it's gotten to soap opera levels and yeah, there's space stuff now. There's space jokes in Fast and Furious. So that's where we are. It was a little too over the top for me. I think not enough grounding. The family stuff kind of feels a little bit cheesy and kind of almost just like self-parody at this point. But still some fun action scenes, some fun new additions or kind of returning characters who get bigger or, you know, get teased for bigger things. And it is an ongoing saga. So if you want all that and you've just been looking to get back in theaters, I mean, it is worthy of theaters. It's Fast and Furious. So they have those big, crazy stunts. But yeah, that Tarzan swing happens like the first 20 minutes. So that's just the beginning of, you know, the car swinging the car across the canyon. Yeah, that's like the first action set piece. So things just go uphill or downhill from there, depending on how you want to look at it. But yeah, F9. Yeah, and there's a villain in this. I don't even remember his name. I don't even think like I can even tell you a thing about him.
Wait, there's a separate villain?
Oh, yeah.
Because I know Jinx is in here again, right?
Jinx?
Not Jinx. What's her
Cypher?
Name? Yes, thank you.
it's a whole weird, like, it's a pretty intricate storyline. I mean, this movie's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. So there's like a whole thing about like Cypher. And it's a whole, this is like the Iron Man 2 of Fast and Furious movies in the sense that, at one point, they literally, I think Letty literally says, our world is getting bigger, Dom. Like, you know, and it's just like, yeah, there's a whole franchise now and a whole mythos for like 10 people. Like, you know, there's spinoffs and all kinds of stuff happening. So this is like the point where they're like, yeah, we just going full franchise. And so it's nuts. But that's F9. Check that out in theaters.
Well, that's a bummer.
Or not. I'm still going to see it.
I'm excited to see it, but that is a bummer. Mostly
about it's still fun. They still have the humor, the banter, some, like I said, some returning characters show up. It's fun, you know. But it just feels like we have just jumped the shark in a big way in some ways. The other thing I'll mention is Rick and Morty is back, baby. We had the Rick and Morty season 5 premiere last Sunday. And it was a pretty good episode. It was a pretty good premiere for Rick and Morty. One part was just this kind of standalone thing that kind of skewered like Aquaman and Namor and all that stuff as Rick's nemesis. And the other part was a just messed up sci-fi story about Morty going to another dimension that's kind of time displaced where time moves a lot faster. So it's like Rick's method of aging this wine. And so every time he keeps sending Morty for the wine, the people who live in this dimension keep thinking that Morty's basically like the devil and the boy who appears from the magic door. And it's over generations of this species culture that they keep trying to like stop Morty every time he comes back. And it's pretty messed up. And so it was everything you love in a Rick and Morty episode, like the kind of small situational character humor and the big kind of sci-fi concept stuff. Like in a twisted fashion. Love that show. So check it out. It's also free on YouTube right now. So if you don't have like adultswim.com and all that stuff, just go on YouTube to Adult Swim. The first episode of Rick and Morty season 5 is free, showing on YouTube now. And that's my mentions for the week.
Awesome. Janelle, you had some?
I've been watching.
Oh, This Is Pop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. Are you into it?
The episode is so sad. It's so sad.
I know, but it's great, right?
Oh, yeah. Yo, This Is Pop is great. Yeah, go ahead. I'm not trying to steal
This Is Pop. No, you're fine. It's great. It's awesome that we watch the same stuff.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, This Is Pop was a sleeper hit for me. Like, I just randomly put it on while doing chores. And then I was like, yo, wait, hold on. After the first episode, which was kind of based on like boy bands, I was like, I need to put this on the big screen. Like, I need to experience this music loudly on speakers and not my phone. And it's basically just telling the history and the why behind a lot of different things in pop music. And there is episodes on boy bands. There's an episode on the Swedish songwriting community, which has like all of the biggest hits you can imagine in pop music. There's one on festivals. There's the one I'm on right now is hip hop. There's country. It's great.
You're burying the lead though. There's one that made headlines because it's about the rise, fall, and re-rise of auto-tune in the 2000s.
Oh God.
And so it's so sad, bro.
It's sad.
It's about
yeah.
T-Pain, and it's about how the world broke T-Pain.
It wasn't the world, it was Usher.
Yeah. Usher ultimately broke T-Pain. But like it was just all about like, and you never really think about this until you watch it, but like T-Pain did all the auto-tune stuff, then the world said, you know, went crazy with auto-tune fever in the mid-2000s, and they blamed it all on T-Pain. And basically, T-Pain got, like, boxed out of the music industry.
Even
then
though, Kanye yes.
comes back in the late 2000s with 808 and Heartbreak, which is basically a coded word of saying, I'm making T-Pain songs with auto-tune about love songs, and he gets all this money and fame. And T-Pain's dealing with, like depression issues. And
he's such a sweetheart. Oh, my gosh.
T-Pain is awesome.
Like, yeah, I want to be nice T-Pain's best friend. Yeah. Like, I love him so much. And he can sing. Like, they show a clip of him singing.
Dude, you should watch his Tiny Desk concert, man.
Tiny Desk. Oh. He blew up, and it was spectacular. And he didn't say, like, to correct all of these headlines, they're like, oh, T-Pain said that the reason for his massive depression was all because of Usher. And he was just saying that looking back, he thinks that was like the jumping point when Usher said a comment to him, basically saying like, you ruined music for real singers, for people who don't use auto-tune. And I don't think it was like in such an evil way. It was probably like a joke or something, but of course it like broke T-Pain that Usher would say that. But Usher is not a terrible human. Like, he's probably getting so much backlash.
Yeah, he was just talking about
stupid thing to say. Also, Jay-Z recorded a whole song about it.
Yeah.
Death of auto-tune. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man, that was intense. But the irony is that like now, and we've taken a real tangent here. But the irony now is, I want to write T-Pain a letter because I'm like, man, whenever you hear like 2000s music, like people go nuts in a room.
I will be playing that at my wedding. I'm playing T-Pain. Like,
bartender,
that slaps.
Love it.
Man, like, people go nuts these days when you put on T-Pain. Yeah. It's now like an oldies jam. People are like, oh man, that's the jam I remember in 2020. 20 years ago. Oh my God. Anyway, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I need to watch this. I haven't watched this.
This Is Pop. That was, I've been just like cycling through things. Not to cycle back, but somebody in the comments asked me to mention it and I didn't mention it. Dave is also back. The Little Dicky series, Dave, which is his basically, like, if Childish Gambino has Atlanta, Little Dicky has Dave, which is kind of his semi autobiographical. It's like Louie, basically, for Little Dicky. And that's back on FX. And that show is pretty good too. Like,
Louie Anderson really show?
No, Louis C.K.
That's fun.
Yeah. It was a joke. No, stop. Stop. You're breaking my brain right now. But Dave is back. God. Yes, Dave is back. And this episode this week was it was pretty weird. It was about him and Benny Blanco. And it was just like, it was a crazy episode.
Benny Blanco.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, yes. We saw the trailer for The Harder They Fall. That looks like a cool movie. It's a black Western movie with Idris Elba, Regina King, Jonathan Majors, and a bunch of other people. So that's also on our comicbook.com movies. You guys are just on it today. Jeez.
I'm always up for Westerns.
So. Matt, you've been holding back because you had to hold back for what you want to get into. So come on, get into it.
I know. I think this is pop set me up pretty dang well.
It's a nice transition.
We got to get you out of here. So you need to run through yours so we can do comics too.
Yeah. Real quick mention, market calendars, July 9th is WitcherCon, and Netflix today released a trailer for it. And we got three kind of quick sneak peeks at some of the footage that's going to be shown. One very much looks like Kaer Morhen. They're going to actually show like the full, we've seen concept art and we've seen some glimpses of it, like the inside, but this actually looks like a full on shot. It's pixelated, but it looks like that. Vesemir is probably going to get shown, probably going to see some Ciri, hoping to see some Triss maybe in there as well. So definitely tune in on July 9th. We'll have it all covered on the site, but just FYI. Also, Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade. I got to make my way through that. The review should be up very soon. I will say I love the core game, which is like the first part of probably three or four chapters of this full thing. This is very much like the first part I adored, and then it kind of goes into just like it's a lot of battles without as much of the kind of character substance stuff in between. You're just fighting a lot, which is really fun, but it kind of loses steam a little bit in the middle. And then towards the end, it like picks that up. And I thought they did a really good job with the new character Sonnen, and Yuffie is awesome. I always love Yuffie. So check that out. If you're curious, that'll be up on the site soon. And then of course, Kofi's favorite show, iCarly, which by the way, I saw Half Cent Josh was also excited for me to talk about iCarly.
I have a niece that's now in her a teenager. I am familiar with iCarly.
So the revival has most of the cast back, not everybody. There's no Gibby. Of course, there's no Sam, but that's because like she's just Jeanette is not acting anymore. I don't know why Gibby's not on the show, but the rest of the cast returns and it's set years later. They've kind of all lived their lives and they come back to this. The first four episodes are out, and I gotta say, like, you never know with these revivals, like whether they're gonna recapture the magic and it's gonna feel forced or whatever. The first three kill. And I actually haven't seen the fourth one yet, so that's not to say the fourth one's bad. I just haven't seen it yet. But the first three episodes I thought were such, like, they're perfect. Like the humor, that if you like the original iCarly and you liked baby Spencer and you liked Spencer being an idiot and them kind of forming these plots around it, you're going to love this. I mean, I laughed out loud at a bunch of the stuff. It's fun. It's in on its joke. You know, like Spencer's rich now, but Spencer's rich because he made an accidental artistic statement by his statue burning, and everyone thought it was a statement on life and society. He's like, no, it caught fire, but like no one knows that, so he becomes this really famous artist and gets loaded. It's like, it's all these just fun kind of takes on stuff. So definitely check it out. It's on Paramount Plus. I heartily recommend it. This is like right there with the Saved by the Bell
excellent service to watch on.
Yes, exactly. Very good service. So definitely recommend. But that's iCarly. So I got to do all of those.
What if you like never watched iCarly to begin with?
It's still fun, but you're like, you're not going to appreciate it as much as because you don't know the, like, there's very much in jokes.
Am I older than you guys? I don't understand. Like,
I know what ages we are.
I know. How did I not watch this? And you guys did. I'm so confused.
I have a niece that's now a teenager. So when she was like, so you're talking about like, like whatever years ago it was, she like, yeah, man, I had to watch so much iCarly back to back.
I remember getting drunk in college and coming home and seeing the real life of Zach and Cody, but like I was a drunk college kid watching.
I am a giant child. So whether I was in the bracket or not, I watched all this stuff because like I watched all this stuff. It has nothing to do with age for me. It's just my taste.
That is lovely, and I appreciate it.
That's me. I did love the Freddie living through his pain, because Freddie at this point has had like two divorces. He's living with his mom again. There's a lot of stuff there, but it's good. So yeah, so that's that. Let's move on to comics, because I know we got crunch time here. Real quick, let's start with Heroes Return, because I feel like we started out on a previous podcast talking about Heroes Reborn, kind of the lead up to it, and that first issue. And from what I recall, everyone was like, kind of, oh, it was kind of like, okay, Like, no one came away floored, I don't think, but like, we liked some of the ideas. Now we've seen this whole thing come back. Heroes Return is out. It kind of sets the status quo back with a few interesting wrinkles that Jason Aaron has really been building in his Avengers run. By the way, spoilers incoming for these books, because one of them is pretty big. So the biggest thing is, if you've noticed in Aaron's run in Avengers, there's been a big emphasis on Mephisto and dealing with some of the, like, even in the Age of Khonshu, there was like a bunch of these Mephistos and stuff that they ended up battling. That was the whole thing, right? That's kind of why Khonshu went nuts. He was like, there's a big disaster coming. Mephisto's at the center of it. We have to stop him and all that. So this has been building. And here, this whole event was spearheaded essentially by a corrupted Coulson, who kind of became president of this reality and had this kind of evil version of the cube and all that. So we see all this happen, and the Squadron Supreme is kind of this new Earth's protectors, but we see the original Avengers kind of return. So once you get to the end of this, it's like that Mephisto storyline finally kind of pays off to a point. And we see, like, I think it's called the Council of Red from what I remember. And it's just like all the different Mephistos from all across the different timelines and Earth.
This is why we didn't have the one in WandaVision.
And they've really been building with this, even in the BC stuff, where like Iron Man goes back in time and he's kind of left alone. He's talking. They've really been building here. Aaron does that really well. Plants a seed and then he really does build on it. But this still kind of felt like it should be at Avengers, not in its own. Like, it doesn't feel big enough to warrant its own series. Like, it doesn't feel, this is not like a Absolute Carnage or Empire or anything like that. It just didn't feel like it was that, because by the end, like, the story doesn't really end up anywhere different other than those couple of changes. Like, we're right back to the status quo. And aside from the Squadron Supreme and this Mephisto's running around and all teamed up, like, it doesn't, there's nothing else. It's kind of like this bookended thing. It was kind of like, why wasn't that in the core series? So I don't know. I came off kind of like, I like the directions we're going at the end, but I wasn't exactly hyped about the issue itself. That's me. What'd you guys think?
I actually had to, and I didn't have to, I was already in the process of reading them, but I binged through like so much Heroes Reborn in the last week. Cause I had to read book six, book seven, and Heroes Return and a bunch of the spinoffs, which I actually liked some of the spinoffs. They were actually pretty exciting. The X-Men one was pretty good.
Yeah.
But as a whole, the series has grown on me more. I almost wish like we had gotten time to just spend time with the Squadron Supreme and their stories and done more with that before we got into the whole Blade and bringing everybody back and the mystery of what happened, because this actually is a kind of interesting universe to kind of explore and see. So Heroes Return, I it's okay. I know we got to bring this whole thing to a close, and so that's fine. But I actually was having kind of more fun just beginning to get lost in this world and see the kind of alternate takes on things and some of the fun, because the Squadron Supreme, they become, if nothing else, they're actually interesting characters. True. To me. And I'm kind of happy that they're lingering around here and are kind of still going to be active. Like, I'm happy Nighthawk is still active and still going to be an antagonist out here and things like that. And Dr. Spectrum, I like all these characters. I like the Blur is like a hilarious take on Flash and is really, they utilize that character very well. So, yeah, I don't think this did anything for the main Avengers or Avengers mythos. I think it did a good job to set Mephisto up, like you said, as this major big bad that's been running through a bunch of books and influencing quite a few things. And I think it's good to kind of shake up the Marvel universe in introducing these alternate universe characters who can really now kind of affect things and still be great antagonists for the main Avengers and stuff, because they are a compelling enough team and they built them up enough and really sold them enough that I could see them becoming, you know, like I said, antagonists for the Avengers for a good deal of years. So if nothing else, I think those things were accomplished, even if this as a whole, in terms of like famous alternate universes in the Marvel universe, this one may not like really last and be as distinctive and memorable.
Right. Janelle, what'd you think?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you guys always say it pretty well. You wrap it up. So I'll just say from my perspective, which is I have not read all of these books. I definitely have not read the side stories. And I was a little hazy. I didn't quite know what was happening, but I still enjoyed it. I still, like, I loved the president being crazy. And, you know, the first, I felt like the killing of S.H.I.E.L.D. and these agents, like just seeing how he murdered them in the first like slide was awesome. Like I was like, it was really well done. And it freaked me out. Like my stomach dropped a little bit, just that first part. But I did feel a little puzzled. I was kind of like, who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Wait, what squadron? I don't care. I know these characters. I'm familiar with them. I like seeing them. And I enjoyed it, but I would definitely say like picking it up, not having not read much of the background, like anything else that's been going on, was a little difficult for me at least.
Understand.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. I would say, I don't know if I'd, this would be probably a really good one to revisit and trade once all of the stuff is with it, you know, kind of like they've done.
Yeah, very much agreed.
And maybe that's where it gets its fair shake. But yeah, just month to month with everything else just going on, it felt kind of like it got lost. And then next we're going to get to Infinite Frontier.
First of all, you have just been, we got to stop watching you, letting you watch Loki. You have been on just a crazy multiverse tear this week. between this, Heroes Reborn, and now Infinite
Frontier. Yeah, there is a lot. That's a good point. It's a very good point. I almost picked Checkmate for this week because that was also very good. How could you not go with this? Okay, so here's the thing. Leaning into the multiverse thing, if you don't like multiverses, this is not the book. This is not the book to read at all. This is all this is. However, what's really interesting is I love what they've done by letting. So, okay, obviously, spoilers ain't coming for this. I have to say that. So, I love what they've done because typically, what happens when they do like a multiverse event is that only the heroes ever know, and even then, sometimes half of them don't. Right, and it's like a couple key characters know what happened, and then they're the ones that everything revolves around. And I love that here we've kind of subverted that finally and been like, no, if you have a giant world universe changing event, everyone's going to kind of know. And I love that, like, just ordinary people on the street are like debating what a multiverse is because they know what happened. They know the giant war that happened and that like things were restarted, but they don't understand everything as it would be in real life. So I love that, like, we're getting these conversations with people around of like, well, here's what really happened. And like, people are debating if it's true or not. And it felt like that was actually really grounding for me amidst all the craziness that is in this book. I thought that was really interesting. And I want to see them go forward with that and run with it, because I think that's just such a different idea for these events. We've seen so many crises and they never really touch on this stuff. Also, this is very much like this book touches on a bunch of different things. So it's not one continuous storyline, but they're all sort of kind of linked. Seeing like President Superman and that world and like how it, like Thomas Wayne, like how did he get there? There's a lot of interesting mysteries. The big bad at the end. Well, we don't really know that big bad yet, but the kind of medium bad that is revealed towards the end of the book. I'm not kidding you. I cannot take another book that does reverse Flash. Like, I just like, oh my God, stop using that character every time there's a Flash story. So when I went to turn the page, I was like, please don't be, please don't be, please don't be. And then it was Psycho Pirate. And I was so happy. I was like, I've never been more happy to see Psycho Pirate in my life. It's like, oh my God, that's awesome.
Oh boy.
At least it's not reverse Flash.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of reverse Flash. So, but I thought there's some really interesting ideas here. And I'm interested to see like this series go on, and I want to see them flesh out some of this stuff. So that's me. What did you guys think?
I think that this book was almost too stacked with mysteries. Like you said, there was like an interesting mystery on every page. It's like you got President Superman leading a team of Justice Leaguers from across the multiverse. You got Flash policing the multiverse and discovering the Omega universe. You got Thomas Wayne showing up on their doorstep. Like, alone, these are all just enough for premises for like a book. But this book has like 20 other premises on top of that. You got Roy Harper showing up as a Black Lantern. You got Psycho Pirate encountering Flash. Like, yeah, there's a lot that goes on in this book, and I'm not mad at it, but I think it's a little too packed. Oh, you have Extant showing up for like a thing.
Another one.
Well, yeah. So
the continuing Alan Scott stuff. Like, there's where's Jade? Like, yeah, there's a lot here.
There's a lot in here. It's a pretty dense book. And like you said, if you haven't been reading like Dark Knight's Metal and all this other kind of stuff that they've done, and, you know, even Future State and all that, and all this stuff, like, some of this stuff is going to be really super confusing. Like, all of this stuff is going to be super confusing to you.
Yeah.
So you've got to be this is for the DC people who have been into these storylines and what, and just the entire thing of the multiverse and what DC has been trying to do to straighten out their continuity. You got to be kind of invested to get into this book. I didn't necessarily like the average people arguing about what this crisis was and like what had happened, because to me it just felt like a really ham-fisted metaphor for people in the real world debating if the crisis we just had was real or not. Like, the dialogue was just purely like that scene in the diner's purely lifted, obviously, from a you know, our whole thing about the pandemic and people not believing and not wanting to accept like there's something this gravity of, you know, calamity can happen. But so I found that kind of
true.
No, it's true. It was spot on, but it's spot on commentary. It just made me roll my eyes a little bit. You even got this scene between whatchamacallit, the guy with a skull head.
Bones, Director Bones.
Yeah, Mr. Director Bones, and like that whole thing over the piece of cake, which is great. There's so many great scenes in this, but it's so packed that's hard to retain like most of it, because every time there's like a shiny new thing, like, ooh, now what's this over here? And like, so that was just kind of my only criticism, but I'm going to keep reading it. I want to read issue 2.
That's probably why I liked it. I like shiny things.
Well, I was saying it, Janelle, so because I know, there's a lot here, and we haven't necessarily touched on every single thing over the last, you know, few months. So what did you think?
I dug it. Like, I was, I felt more along for the ride with this one than our Marvel pick, which is now I'm feeling like that's odd. I don't know if it's because we've been reading so much and I was a little bit prepped for it with our DC reads every week, but I was really into it. And I was loving that there were people in denial about what was going on. And I liked that point, but I also didn't even think of the pandemic stuff. I was just immersed in like that world. So I was like, oh, of course people aren't going to believe it. Like, you know, the average Joe Schmo doesn't even know. Hey, it just rhymed. I really was intrigued by it. I was more intrigued by this book than our Marvel pick. And I thought they did a great job, and I'm interested to see where it goes. I probably missed quite a few of these like mysteries. They probably just went right over my head, but it didn't bother me. Like, I didn't feel left out or anything. So I'm really excited to keep this one going. And I know that we just like barely touch on it, but the Captain Marvel is like everything on the entire planet. It's everything. So nothing can hold a candle to that. Yes. Like, nothing can hold a candle to that. So
music to my ears, Janelle.
Yeah.
Music to my ears. So I will be very interested to see how they keep these mysteries going, and like, they'll seed it in other books, of course, but like, this really feels like it needs to be its own kind of series, just touching on all these different things all the time. Or at least we need to do it like once a quarter to kind of, hey, here's where we are with this, to keep it all organized. But yeah, so that's comics.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to wish you guys happy Friday, and thank you for tuning in with us. We will be here every Friday at 12 noon Eastern time, live on Twitch/comicbook or on Facebook or YouTube. If you missed the show, you can rewatch it on those platforms right after. If you just want the audio, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast to get it going for you. If you guys want to follow the show, you can follow us at the @ComicBookNation Twitter handle. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Janelle Wheeler.
If you like Comic Book Nation, go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. Say something nice. It really does make us feel better. Keeps our mental health in order. Thank you very much. Love you guys for tuning in and riding with us once again. Hope to see you next week because movies are back. TVs are coming back. We are back in business, baby. So let's go. This is Comic Book Nation. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Bye, guys.